actions to yourself. In that way, an embedded system and discipline only gets more embedded. Many athletes also grow up equating great workouts with working out longer and more often than anyone else. They also believe that the best workouts require lifting the maximum amount of weight. Why lift 200 pounds if you can lift 300? Why run a half marathon if you can run 26 miles? Even people who don't play a sport, but who want to keep fit, go to the gym and work out, say, 45 minutes on a stair climber or stationary bike, followed by another half hour doing the maximum number of weight or circuit training exercises possible. This idea, focus on the most workouts and the longest workouts, and you'll get better at all the things you want to improve, makes sense up to a point. In football, for example, there's a widespread belief that working hard in the off-season means you should do wind sprints and weightlifting. And yes, by doing those things, you can improve your general athleticism. The mistake comes when you believe that by working hard and being able to run and jump, you'll become better at your job, which I don't believe is entirely true. There's a difference between a strong or a fast athlete and a well-rounded athlete. At football combines, for example, coaches ask players to lift weights, sprint, and jump. To them, that's what being a good athlete means. Now, those are three specific linear skills, but are they really a measure of great athleticism? To my mind, we shouldn't define athleticism only one way. Athleticism has something to do with speed and strength, but not everything. It also requires coordination and mental toughness. Ask people to list the world's greatest athletes, and most will name someone who has all those attributes versus, say, the world's strongest man or the world's fastest human. In short, our ideas about how to train to become a great athlete are out of balance. A coach may work a player hard at one thing, and a player may work harder than anyone else at that thing, but in the end, that player is getting better at only one or two things. And all too often, his improvement comes at the expense of pliability, if he doesn't commit to that as well. The most/longest model has been in place since I was in high school and before. Again, that model may seem logical. Sometimes it even yields benefits in the short term. But it won't work if you want to sustain your peak performance. Why? Because most sports don't require those extremes of effort or exertion, or those skills. In my job, throwing a football, there's no need for me to bench press 300 pounds. It's not even about diminishing returns. It's actually detrimental to my performance. The same is true for long-distance running. Why would I ever train to the point where I could run a marathon? That requires a different physical makeup and configuration that I need for my job, and one that would put a lot of unnecessary strain on my feet, ankles, or knees. That's why one of our 12 TB12 principles is creating a balanced, optimized training program for the sport or activity you need to do, or the daily acts of living you're asking your body to perform. To use an analogy, just because you're standing at a buffet, that doesn't mean you're supposed to eat everything. You should eat just enough so that you feel full and no more. Sports training is no different. If you're an athlete, instead of focusing on the most or the longest, you should be training your muscles to work appropriately for the actions you ask them to do. If you do daily squats with a 400-pound load on your back, the only thing you'll get better at is squatting with a 400-pound load on your back. Outside professional weightlifting, when is anyone asked to do that? The answer, rarely, and then it's probably sports position specific. Again, that may be gratifying personally, but without the right amount of pliability, I believe it comes at the expense of your long-term health. To repeat, most of what you train for should be focused on making your muscles work appropriately for the actions you're asking them to do. Put another way, your strength workouts should follow the function of your sport or activity. We focus too much on maximum strength and not enough on optimal strength. Most athletes don't know this. As I said, if they play a coached sport, they do what they're told. Now, in defense of the age-old strength and conditioning model, throughout professional sports history, no one has given much thought to what it means to play for a long time. The focus has always been on playing. Athletes just want to make the team. If they get injured a few years later, instead of pointing fingers at the training they've done their whole lives, they blame the sport. But being a professional means taking responsibility for your body, your health, and your career. If you don't, who will? It means you ask why you're doing what you're doing. If elevating your heart rate and lifting weights work so well, then why are the statistics around them so bad? Consider that every year in the United States, 2 million high school athletes are injured, which leads to more than 500,000 doctor's visits, which leads to way too many surgeries. College players are just as prone to injury, and so are adult amateur athletes. 70% of all college athletes say that they've played through an injury at least once, and more than 1 million adult amateur athletes get a sports-related injury every year. A good pro football career lasts around 10 years, but the average NFL career today is 3.3 years, with most of those careers cut short by injury. Younger players are leaving the game earlier, too. In 2014, 19 players age 30 or younger retired from the NFL, versus 5 players back in 2005. Players say the biggest reason is their fear of the long-term effects of playing while injured. I don't have that fear. Bottom line, playing sports increases the likelihood of injuries because you more regularly confront excessive loads and forces. That's why, as an athlete, if I want to live a healthier life on and off the field, I have to make great choices that are aligned with my goals. But first, let's go back to high school, where most athletes are introduced to strength training. In order to get better at their sport, they're urged to lift weights, and to increase the amount of weight they lift as time goes on. Without incorporating pliability, their muscles become tight, dense, and stiff. They lose their muscle pump function, which leads to imbalance in their bodies. Imbalances lead to muscle compensation. Muscle compensation leads to muscle overload, and muscle overload leads to injury. Here, a balance of strength, conditioning, and pliability needs to take place, but all too often doesn't. Once you determine how much strength you need, that's when you should determine how much pliability you need as well. This same cycle and training system follows athletes into college, which is where a lot of athletes keep getting injured without understanding why. It continues into professional sports. If a player is already lifting, say, 225 pounds for 15 reps on a bench press, for whatever reason, bench presses and squats are the most common criteria for strength, he feels he should lift even more. Every day I see players bench pressing 300 or 400 pounds, and when they tear a muscle, they tell themselves it's because they didn't stretch enough beforehand. They don't realize that 9 times out of 10, their muscle tear had nothing to do with stretching. Tears happen because muscles are not absorbing and dispersing the amount of force placed on them. How do you change that? By putting an emphasis on pliability in order to create a balance that can help absorb those extreme forces. It isn't only healthy players who feel the pressure to lift more and harder and longer. Even injured players gravitate toward a set of corrective exercises that involve improving strength. As I said, there's a widespread belief that injury is the direct result of muscle weakness, that an injured muscle needs to be re-strengthened. But muscle soreness or pain is mostly the result of muscles that are overloaded. The last thing athletes should do is strengthen an injured muscle more than they already have without first bringing it into balance through pliability training. Once balance is restored, that's when re-strengthening should occur. In addition, a lot of athletes still believe that the only thing they need to do to keep themselves fit is to stay strong and conditioned while maintaining low body fat. They don't want to hear that all the work, energy, and sweat they've put into their workouts could be damaging. They've spent years doing things one way. And until they discover pliability, they have no idea they can have a body or a career free of the pain that athletes of the past have endured. What most athletes don't ask and should be asking is, how can I train to not get hurt? Why is strength important but only up to a point? What are the things I need to do and the decisions I need to make to keep myself from getting hurt or from injuring myself without meaning to in the future? From high school through college and today in the pros, I've seen over and over again the impact that injuries have on players and teammates. I've also seen more athletes than I can count navigating a system that emphasizes short-term solutions that target symptoms, not causes. Hurt your hamstring? Then let's just focus on the hamstring. Why don't we instead ask why you hurt your hamstring, and what you can do to keep it from getting hurt again? If an injury is the result of excessive force, why don't we figure out ways the body can absorb that force? But we don't. When something breaks, we try to fix it and then we move on, without addressing the root causes. But surgery for durability is an oxymoron. Having surgery doesn't lengthen your career, it shortens it. The result is more injuries and more broken athletes, not just across pro football, but in all sports and at all ages and levels. Another problem created by the traditional strength and conditioning model, the one-size-fits-all philosophy. Let's look at football. A pro football team has around 70 players, and trainers typically track player data over the course of the season. Again, most athletes grew up believing that the stronger they get, the better their overall performance will be. That's just not true. Strength matters, but only as it relates to the function of the job an athlete is being asked to do, or the position he or she is playing. In my case, my friends all know that I'm not going around carrying heavy dumbbells. During my workouts, I'm focused instead on doing the things that can help me to do my job better. What is my job? As an NFL quarterback, my job is to stand in the pocket, cut, run, throw, and generally withstand the tough nature of the sport I've played for more than two decades. How strong do I need to be? How much weight do I need to lift? The answers are based on a variety of factors, including my weight, my body fat percentage, and the stability of my core. What's the job of an offensive lineman? Well, an offensive lineman needs to be strong, and to develop dense muscles, and to push and brace against a lot of incoming weight. How about a wide receiver, whose job it is to run and catch the ball? How much strength does he need, and how much weight should he lift? Certainly not as much as the offensive lineman. In the end, a wide receiver needs to get his muscles to work appropriately for the actions he's asking them to do. Once you determine how much strength you need, that's when to determine how much pliability you need to do. Day after day, I see players working extremely hard at doing the wrong thing. I'm talking about some of my own teammates, too. They're committed to greater strength and conditioning, but often they're doing it at levels that won't ever pay off for them. It's a system of diminishing returns. So why do they keep doing it? And why do trainers keep teaching it? Because it's all they were ever taught. If you're doing the wrong thing and working hard at it, you're just getting a lot better at getting worse, and at a faster rate, too. Imagine you have a faulty golf swing. If you keep practicing the same way you always have, you'll only end up reinforcing your own bad form. Why not focus instead on what will get you to where you want to go? We've all heard the definition of insanity: doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, sports training is the apotheosis of that. Way too often, we get trapped in the same old routines. Doing sprints, lifting weights, and the pain, rehab, and recovery that follow make up a vicious cycle that injures and spits out athletes year after year. It's not only institutionalized, but it's also extremely profitable for a lot of people. There's not a lot of money to be made from healthy athletes, or for that matter, from healthy people. The sports training system today is also linked to a mindset that's focused on short-term gains. Coaches, trainers, and athletes all want big wins now. Most of them don't have the patience to develop the mindset it takes to achieve consistent, continuous results. Still, if I've learned one thing as I go into my 18th NFL season, it's how important it is to devote yourself to an attitude of sustained peak performance that never wavers in its longer-term perspective. Playing sports, especially professionally, is a multi-year commitment and endeavor. Would I want to play sports for only a few years, or would I want to play at the highest levels for a decade, 2 decades, or longer? The answer is obvious. As I said in the introduction, it can be hard for younger athletes to wrap their heads around the concept of pliability. Few of them are thinking long term, and the same goes for most of us. It's a human bias to focus on short-term gains without factoring in their longer-term consequences. When you're younger, you feel invincible. You haven't experienced years and years of muscle contractions, overloads, and injuries. You also don't feel the impact of poor lifestyle choices or habits as much as you do when you're older. I tell younger athletes they have all the tread on their tires right now. But what do they want? And how do they see themselves in the future? Still, their motivation may not be there. Given a choice between spending hours per week doing pliability or being with their friends, most of them will choose their friends. Then, there are those athletes who've been working out one way for a long time and don't want to change their routine, out of fear they won't achieve the same results. What does it mean to not get hurt? It means I've given myself the opportunity to be the best I can be year after year, mentally and physically. And once you incorporate pliability into your strength and conditioning regimen, along with the other amplifiers this book goes into, I know it will take you where you want to go. Achieving sustained peak performance doesn't happen through pliability alone. The amplifiers you'll be hearing about ahead, hydration, nutrition, and brain training, rest and recovery, accelerate pliability and ensure that your inner environment is just as healthy and balanced as your outer environment. 9 years ago, I strained my right groin tendon, a very common football injury. One of the doctors I consulted recommended surgery, saying there was a 99% chance the strain would bother me during the entire season. He also warned me that my left groin muscle would probably need the same surgery within the next 24 months. After weighing my options, I decided on a more holistic approach. Alex and I decided to work on it differently, through pliability training over the next 3 weeks. After lengthening and softening my right groin muscle, along with the other muscle groups in my leg that correlated to my movements, the tension was removed from my tendon, and I felt zero pain. In the 11 years since, I've never had another right groin problem. It's understandable that a doctor would recommend surgery based on his own experience and training, without understanding the benefits of pliability. What is pliability? Pliability is the name Alex and I give to the training regimen he and I do every day. Using his hands and elbows, Alex performs targeted deep force muscle work to lengthen and soften every muscle of my body as I contract and relax that muscle. We almost always focus on my entire body, unless one area takes up more of our time. He and I do this twice, once before a full workout, and again after, for reasons I'll explain in a moment. Pliability is different from massage, but for the sake of visuals, imagine that I'm lying on a table. Instead of lying there passively, I'm rhythmically contracting and expanding my muscles as Alex works on them one at a time. My calf, my hamstring, my quad, my triceps, my biceps, up to 20 muscle groups in all. As I contract and relax each muscle, Alex, using optimal pressure and forces similar to those I experience playing, training, or carrying out the daily acts of living, strokes through that muscle, in isolation, and always toward the heart, for 20 seconds on average. Rather than working all the muscles of my body simultaneously, he focuses on each part of each muscle, the outside, lateral, the inside, medial, and the middle. The pressure he applies is intense, again, trying to mimic what I experience in my life. Once, when a team at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology tested us, the researchers found that Alex was applying anywhere from 50 to 100 newtons, a unit of force, of pressure, using just his finger. When he uses the point of his elbow, the pressure can approach 400 newtons or more. That's almost 90 pounds of force. That means Alex is applying 90 pounds of force to individual areas of my muscles. The sheer amount of pressure he exerts trains my brain to create neural pathways, and neural primes my muscles for the extreme amounts of impact I face over the course of a practice, a game, or my life in general. Alex is educating my brain and my muscles to stay lengthened, softened, and primed, which is a big reason why I'm able to absorb and disperse hits well. As Alex and I do pliability training, a number of critical benefits are taking place in my body and brain. As he forcefully strokes through each muscle, always toward the heart, while I contract and relax it, Alex is educating that muscle to fire at 100% capacity, or as we say at TB12, with 100% muscle pump function. He's educating my muscles to stay lengthened and softened, as well as primed, while doing their functions. By giving each of my muscles a positive and intentional traumatic experience, as he lengthens and softens it, Alex is helping forge the connection between my brain and body. He's teaching my brain and body that long, soft, and primed is how I want my muscles to respond to the movement my brain is asking of them. Together, our goal is to help my muscles reach the same lengthened, softened, primed state I need them to be in while carrying out the acts of daily living, which for me include training and playing. I undergo many of the exact same treatments every time. The process of lengthening and softening my muscles is predictable and repetitive. The only time the routine varies is if I've been traveling or doing things that have made my muscles tighten, stiffen, and grow dense. Or if I'm focusing on a muscle that's been damaged from impact, say my shoulder, or a body part such as my leg. Otherwise, the process of pliability is very routine. If I'm overbuilt or dense in one area, that's when I know I need to lengthen and soften the muscles in question. If I've done a lot of chest workout with bands, that will make my muscles dense. When I start to throw, I can tell that I'm not as fluid as I should be, which means that I've overbuilt those muscles. The solution is to rebalance those muscles by lengthening and softening them. As I said, I do pliability both before and after a full workout, but each session is slightly different in its purpose. In the before part of pliability, I'm training my muscles to stay long, soft, and prime during the workout I'm about to put them through. If you think about it, a runner doesn't just show up on a track and run a 100-yard sprint. First, he primes his muscles, and the before part of pliability does the same thing for me. Next comes the point where I stop doing pliability and begin my actual workout. I may work on dropbacks or throwing mechanics. I may run or swim or do strength training. If I'm at the TB12 Sports Therapy Center, I'll do a full-body workout using resistance bands, trying to activate 100% muscle pump function in every part of my body, feet, ankles, shins, quads, glutes, core, shoulders, arms, neck, and so on, maintaining full muscle pump function through full range of motion. Right at the point in the workout when my arm or leg muscles start to tire, I'll stop working out and finish with another pliability session. But there's a small difference. During the after session of pliability, I'm focused mostly on flushing out lactic acid to facilitate lymph movement, allowing more oxygenated blood to rejuvenate my muscles. The strokes are similar, but there's less force and less speed as I contract and relax my muscles. Again, I'm training my brain to store what my muscles have just learned. What have they learned? They've learned to be long, soft, and primed through intense training movements, the same movements I use in games. That's what ideal training looks like to me. I go through this process again and again. In this way, my brain learns new habits and responses, and by remaining in a lengthened, softened, primed state, my muscles are much less likely to get hurt. Why? Because when my body comes up against force, say two defenders trying to tackle me, my muscles can more easily absorb and disperse that force. Imagine the alternative, where, say, three of my muscles are responsible for absorbing force, but two of them are so dense that they can't contract and relax fully, and therefore can't evenly absorb and disperse the impact. That means the remaining muscle, the weakest in the chain, so to speak, takes the full brunt of the impact. This muscle becomes overloaded with force, and that overload often results in an acute injury. As I've stated repeatedly, pliability is the game changer and should be incorporated by all athletes at all ages if they want to try to avoid injury and sustain their own peak performance. In the end, doing pliability is about training smarter. Over the years, I've made a proactive choice to reallocate the time I used to spend doing wind sprints, running up hills, and lifting weights to getting daily pliability instead. I credit the pliability I've done with the fact that, except for my 2008 ACL injury, I've played the past 17 seasons without significant injury. Now I'll explain pliability step by step, beginning with what our brains and our bodies store and why. At TB12, we look at things through four different lenses. 1. Am I increasing oxygenation? 2. Am I reducing inflammation? 3. Am I optimizing pliability? 4. Are my goals aligned with my training regimen? How a brain learns. Our brains are the central processing centers for what our bodies do and how we live. That includes how our muscles move, respond, and behave. Our brains communicate with our muscles via nerve cells called neurons. Neurons connect to a specific muscle, the glute, the hamstring, the biceps, and so on. When I pick a football up off the ground, it may look straightforward, but the act of picking up a ball is the result of a lot of brain-body coordination. Before I reach down, a neuron in my brain fires, causing a neuron in my spinal cord to fire. My spinal cord relays a series of impulses that travel down one side of that neuron to my shoulder, arm, and hand muscles. My muscle fibers shorten and grow dense. Once I pick up the ball, they go back to their relaxed position. The whole operation, impulse to pick up the ball, neuron firing, chemical impulses, short, dense muscles, takes place in an instant. Human behavior is either innate or instinctual, like smiling, laughing, or crying, or else it's learned, meaning it comes from our personal experience. In both cases, our brains and bodies memorize and store that behavior or those patterns. When we're young and in our teens and early 20s, we're at the peak of good health. Our bodies are extremely pliable. They have plenty of collagen, which helps our muscles contract and relax fully and evenly. We also recover quickly. As time goes on, our brains and bodies begin accumulating both negative and positive habits, experiences, and traumas, which our brains store in their neural pathways. Imagine that you fell off your bike when you were a kid, or you injured a muscle playing a sport in high school. Your brain stores that traumatic event in its neural pathways, and the memory of that event, conscious or unconscious, determines how your body responds to any future movement related to that muscle or bone or tendon. It doesn't matter whether the event took place 1 year ago or 10 years ago. It's now a muscle memory. That's why if you start running up hills and doing wind sprints and lifting heavy weights in high school, as most athletes do, over time the brain locks in these habits and movements, and they become learned behaviors that teach your body how you want your muscles to function, reinforced by the fact that every other athlete is doing the same thing. You won't change those behaviors until the negative trauma is replaced by the positive traumas of pliability training. Say that you ask your body to lift heavy weights. Then you ask it to run and cut, then throw, then rest. By training your body to do a lot of different things, it can get confused. That's why the more we train our bodies to do the tasks specific to the sports we play, or to our daily acts of living, the less our brains have to learn, and the less our bodies have to adjust. Lymphatic system. The lymphatic system is a network of tissues, vessels, and organs that serves as a kind of vacuum cleaner inside our bodies. The lymph system cleanses and helps eliminate toxins, wastes, and other unwanted substances by draining a colorless, clear fluid, known as lymph, from our tissues and funneling it back into the bloodstream, always in the direction of the heart. It also helps our bodies maintain fluid balance and absorb fats and nutrients. Pliability, as well as optimal muscle pump function, facilitates the expulsion of lymph from our body's tissues, leading to healthier, stronger muscles. Body imbalances. Many of the clients who come into the TB12 Sports Therapy Center for the first time have no idea their bodies are imbalanced and that their muscles aren't contracting evenly at 100%. Often the underlying issue is an imbalance. Body imbalances, which can come from the acts of everyday life, walking, running, working out, wearing the wrong shoes, and so forth, are extremely common. Bear in mind that the muscles in our body are designed to support our structures. Muscles aren't for strength and they're not for show. Their function is to protect our bones and to contract, which gives us the strength to move. Imagine you get a Charlie horse in which your muscles go into spasm for several seconds, accompanied by severe pain. Or, in my case, imagine that during a game, an opponent runs at full speed and smashes his helmet into my thigh. It happens, injuring my quad muscle. Aware that something is wrong, my brain sends a message to the muscles surrounding my quad muscle. It tells them to contract and become tight, dense, and stiff. In effect, my brain is telling those muscles to create a natural splint to support and protect my injured quad, and to keep it from hyperextending even more, at least until the bruise in my quad goes away. The problem is, with my quad muscle no longer firing, and the other muscles in my body stepping in to compensate for that injured quad, my body becomes imbalanced. With my quad muscle no longer firing, it goes flat. It won't contract and relax at 100%. As a result, that non-functioning quad muscle and the coordination of my right leg can end up impairing my hip, my knee, my ankle, and my foot. Basically, all the other muscles in my body, with the exception of my quad, have to work harder to accomplish what my brain is asking my body to do. As with the example I gave earlier, of a child falling off his bike, imbalances are often the result of unhealed injuries. Imagine a time when you hurt your back lifting a heavy box. You are told to rest by not lifting anything for the next few days, and applying ice until your back starts to feel better. You probably will feel better, but the question is, do you actually get better? No, because you haven't changed your brain's response in relation to how you hurt your back in the first place. You hurt your back lifting that heavy box because your back muscles became overloaded by the excess amount of force you were exerting on them. Unless you retrain your brain and your muscles through pliability to understand that your back muscles should respond to lifting the box in an optimal, more efficient way, your back will still be overloaded, and you'll have a greater chance of re-injury. To try to avoid re-injuring your back while lifting the same heavy box, you need to balance all the muscle groups that are supposed to work through that particular movement. The point is, the only way to create a change in your brain is by creating a positive and intentional traumatic experience through pliability sessions. Bottom line, no real healing will ever take place in your body unless the brain and the body work together. Most people with imbalances have gotten good at doing things badly, whether it's walking, running, or playing football. Some daily acts of living are unconscious. We walk, run, and sit with imbalances. Multiply that by thousands or millions, and that's a lot of compensation and overload, often resulting in injury. For example, before I met Alex, the muscles in my throwing arm had lost their natural pliability. They had lost optimal muscle pump function. They were contracting and relaxing at, say, 50%. It was a vicious cycle. My arm muscles were so tight that they could no longer fully contract and relax. Deprived of sufficient blood and oxygenation, they couldn't heal. Why weren't they getting sufficient blood and oxygenation? Because they couldn't contract and relax. The only solution was pliability, the lengthening and softening of my arm muscles, which gave that arm the ability to fully contract and relax, with 100% muscle pump function, and allowed for great recovery. Lactic acid. Whenever we exercise, our muscles require greater amounts of oxygen. Sometimes we exercise so hard that our circulatory system can't keep up with our body's demands. In order to maintain the oxygen that our muscles need, a switch takes place. The body transitions from what's known as aerobic metabolism to another state, known as anaerobic metabolism. That's when our bodies begin breaking down our stored glucose and converting it to lactic acid, otherwise known as lactate. This lactate is then used to replenish muscular energy. Even after intense exercise, lactate normally leaves our bodies over time, naturally or through perspiration. But pliability expedites the elimination of that lactate and helps restore the body to a less acidic, more naturally alkaline condition. There are certain players who just love being in the weight room. Picture a guy who's getting ready to do his last squat. The music is blaring. The whole team is huddled around him. When he gets underneath the bar and does that squat, the whole weight room is cheering. By lifting that weight, basically that player is saying to his teammates, "I'm going to get the job done, whatever it takes." That's great for everyone's mental toughness, and it's also great for team camaraderie. It's almost embedded in who we are as athletes. But if a player really loves doing those kinds of exercises because they make him feel good and he gets rewarded for them, he'd better work just as hard on pliability. Many of the workouts I do are specific to the things I want to really excel at. The key is doing pliability before and after any workout, sport, or activity. If you skip pre- and post-pliability, you increase your chances of getting hurt. Doing pliability is like creating a built-in immune system for sports injuries. Muscle memory. Aerobic activity, or sprinting, followed by weightlifting, is the core of the traditional strength and conditioning model. In strength training, when you bench press 200 pounds, what exactly are you training your muscles to do? The answer, to contract hard, to remain tight, dense, and stiff, and to brace the heavy weights that your body is up against. Not only are you training your body, but you're also teaching your brain that tight, dense, and stiff is the optimal condition of your muscles, based on the function of lifting weights. The problem is, if you are playing in a game a few days later and a lineman tackles you, it's possible that those same tight, dense, stiff muscles will lead to a torn muscle or a broken bone, because your body couldn't absorb the forces in a balanced way. Those 200 pounds that you've been bench pressing have come at the expense of lengthened, softened, primed muscles that could have dispersed that hit. As it stands in this weightlifting example, an arm or a leg in a constant state of contraction, which won't bend easily, has very little function on the field, except for, say, certain positions that brace against a lot of incoming weight. That's not to say we don't need strength. We need optimal strength to remain balanced. But more than that, we need pliability to complement that strength in order to increase our durability. Bottom line, whatever messages our brains send to our muscles and that our muscles send to our brains will be stored in the brain's neural pathways. Negative traumas are stored there until they are challenged and replaced by the positive traumas we experience through pliability treatments. Negative versus positive trauma. Trauma is a loaded word, and I want to explain what I mean by it. I don't believe the body differentiates between kinds of trauma. All it knows is that it has experienced an external force that's causing a response in the body and the brain. Most players will say there's a difference between positive and negative trauma. One happens in practice or in the weight room when you incur excessive amounts of force from running, cutting, or lifting. This can also happen in a game. Still, the only thing your muscles know is that they're contracting to absorb forces, and contracting hard. The body may not discriminate between kinds of trauma, but for the purposes of pliability, I do. Of the two kinds of traumas, the one I just described is called negative unintentional. It's usually the result of an injury that is sometimes beyond a player's control, slipping and falling, a bike crash, etc. The second kind of trauma, which creates pliable muscles, is called positive intentional. During both negative unintentional and positive intentional cases, the brain and the body experience forces that are unfamiliar, and the brain stores these forces as muscle memory in order to protect its structure. However, the positive intentional trauma exerted on me through targeted deep force muscle work during pliability trains my body and brain to deal with the negative unintentional traumas that I face in games, practice, or any other environment that's beyond my control. Through positive intentional trauma, I create neural pathways that improve my body's ability to deal with the stresses of the sport I play. As a result of the positive intentional trauma I get from doing pliability, my muscles learn to stay long, soft, and primed, and are able to handle whatever comes my way on or off the field. Why? Because they're in a balanced state, which absorbs and disperses the force any one of my muscles takes at any one time. As I said earlier, when I stand in the pocket, I never know when I'm going to be hit. the moment an opposing player's helmet makes contact with my body, my body is able to absorb that hit thanks to daily pliability. Throughout the movement, my muscles remain long, soft, and primed. Whatever impact I experience is absorbed and dispersed evenly throughout many muscle groups, and not just the specific area where I got hit. When athletes get injured, they shouldn't blame their sport or their age. Injuries happen when our bodies are unable to absorb or disperse the amount of force placed on them. If our bodies can handle that force, it doesn't matter what sport we play or how old we are. That's why age isn't my problem. Training the brain. The brain is composed of tens of billions of cells called neurons, which make connections with other neurons. These connections are called synapses, and our brains contain hundreds of trillions of them. Whenever we learn something new, these synapses thicken, increase, and connect to other neurons to strengthen what we've just learned. The stronger those synapses, and the more neurons they call on, the better our brains can store and retrieve information. To create stronger, faster connections in our brains, we need to practice a habit, skill, or behavior again and again. In turn, our brains generate synapses linked to that habit, skill, or behavior, and call on them anytime we do that thing. The more we practice that habit, skill, or behavior, the more automatically our brains recognize it. Thanks to neuroplasticity, that is, the brain's ability to keep growing, changing, and learning throughout life, pliability retrains the brain by introducing new behavior patterns. In this case, the lengthening and softening of our muscles. Over time, the brain and body realize that this is how we want our muscles to behave as they carry out the jobs we're asking them to do. Train your brain, change your body. Earlier, I said that pliability is different from massage. In what way? The key to pliability is stimulating and re-educating the brain by creating new neural pathways. Massage by itself doesn't do that because it's passive. There is no contraction of your muscles through movement, which means the brain doesn't understand that your muscles need to stay in a long, soft, primed state. Therefore, no muscle pump function takes place. After getting a typical massage, for a few hours or possibly a day, most people feel better, thanks to increased blood flow and a big rush of endorphins. Then they go back to doing what they were doing before. Their brains and muscles haven't learned anything, because no real education has taken place. Static massage doesn't educate muscles. Only positive intentional trauma through pliability does that. The goal of pliability is to evoke a positive neural response in my body before a workout. This process is called neural priming. When I receive targeted deep force work on one of my muscles, I'm forcing my brain to create connections between its neurons and to forge new neural pathways. By doing this again and again, the amount of input my brain neurons need in order to fire up my muscles, whether I do that through working out, running on a treadmill, or using resistance bands, becomes automatic. That's why Alex likes to quote the axiom, "Neurons that fire together, wire together." Thanks to pliability, as the season goes on, I actually begin to feel better, since my brain-body connection gets stronger around the daily functions I'm asking each of them to do. In the off-season, by contrast, with my workouts varying from week to week, it's harder, and my body is actually more sore than it is during the season. My muscles never get good and truly primed for movement. My guess is that the off-season is when many football players neural prime their way to getting injured during the season. That's why I've changed my own off-season training to replicate, as best as I possibly can, what I do during the season. Whether you're 18 or 80 years old, you can attain a higher state of pliability. This means that your muscles are firing at 100% evenly, and that there's reduced load in your muscles. If a college athlete comes into the TB12 Sports Therapy Center looking for sustained peak performance, in general, Alex will tell him it takes about 30 days to notice a difference. After 12 months, that athlete will notice huge leaps. I just turned 40, but I feel like I'm 30. Pliability basics. Most of us are born with adequate amounts of pliability, and some people are born with more pliability than others. As I said earlier, in childhood, adolescence, and into our 20s, our bodies and muscles keep generating plenty of collagen, and this innate pliability accelerates our recovery from exertion and injury. Our blood is oxygen-rich. Our muscles contract and relax evenly, at 100%. We're pliable pretty much all the time. But as our bodies undergo one negative traumatic experience after the next, falls, scrapes, and injuries, as well as heavy weight training and overload, our natural pliability begins to deteriorate. We focus on strength and conditioning, not realizing that our pliability is slowly running out. Even if we've been active our whole lives, we all notice a decrease in our pliability starting when we're in our mid-20s. It becomes harder and harder to work out the way we once did. Our bodies may still be creating and storing collagen, but they're less able to break down and metabolize the lactic acid that begins to accumulate and calcify in our muscles. By the age of 50 or 60, we have roughly 50% less pliability and muscle function than we did when we were in our 20s. And unless we do pliability training, we won't ever get 100% muscle contraction, which circulates oxygen-rich blood from muscle group to muscle group. Collagen. Collagen is the most abundant protein in the body. Found mostly in our skin, bones, and connective tissue, it gives our bodies strength, structure, and elasticity. When we are young, our bodies create and regenerate collagen easily. But as we age, our collagen production declines, and the proteins that make up collagen become more rigid. The result is less elasticity in the skin, organs, and muscles, longer recovery times, and muscular stiffness and soreness. Thanks in part to our natural collagen levels, we don't need as much pliability when we're young as we do when we're older, which explains why younger athletes naturally focus on building up their strength. But beginning in our mid-20s, we need to find a balance between strength, conditioning, and pliability to compensate for the collagen that we lose over time. Right now, at this point in my career, and speaking structurally, I'm as balanced as I've ever been. I feel like my muscles fire evenly, and at 100%. I'm not overbuilt in any one area, which gives me huge advantages on the field. A lot of the time, I'll be playing against athletes who are structurally imbalanced. They have traded pliability for over-strengthening or over-conditioning, and I believe they have a higher probability of getting injured. I'm blessed to have both experience and durability. Pliability by age. Our need for pliability depends not just on our job or function, but also on our age and our goals. There are big physical differences between a 22-year-old and a 40-year-old. For example, at age 40, I have 18 years of strength on the average 22-year-old player. But the 22-year-old has more natural pliability than I do in the form of collagen, which gives his body strength, support, and structure. Basically, he has more tread on his tires. Ideally, athletes should begin pliability at the same time they begin strength training. In general, a 22-year-old athlete needs more strength and conditioning than a 40-year-old athlete, and a player my age needs more pliability than he needs strength and conditioning. That's why today my workouts consist of 25% strengthening, 25% conditioning, and 50% pliability. If I were 22 again, I would devote a quarter of my workout to pliability and the rest to strengthening and conditioning. One of the advantages I have over younger athletes is that at age 40, I'm pliable and I have experience. Younger athletes have natural pliability, but fewer seasons under their belts than I do. If I can negate their natural advantage, I'm in a great competitive position, both physically and in terms of experience. As long as I remain pliable, they can't catch me, and that's why I made the shift to the workouts I do today. The good news for athletes who aren't 22 anymore, you're never too old to get the benefits of pliability. 100% contraction in all your muscles, which in turn allows for greater blood oxygen levels. The greater your blood oxygen levels, the more fully your muscles can expand and contract. The better your muscles can expand and contract, the better your lymph system is able to flush toxins from your system. The result will be healthy and pliable muscles, along with energy and vitality. You'll also be surprised by the effects pliability can have on everyday injuries and conditions. Thanks to oxygen-rich blood infusing every muscle in your body, optimal pliability allows for ongoing regeneration. Strength training without pliability, on the other hand, creates tight, dense, stiff muscles, limited muscle expansion and contraction, less oxygen-rich blood, and overall degeneration. Over time, this unhealthy environment leads to injury, which in turn leads to less muscle pump function, less oxygenation, and less rejuvenation. Unfortunately, this is what aging currently looks like for 99.9% of the world. Some injuries are just part of the job, and beyond the control of any athlete. Take, for example, a hip pointer. When you get a direct blow to your hip bone, that's a line-of-duty injury and often difficult to avoid. But some other injuries, like muscle tears, are, in my experience, most likely avoidable if you are committed to pliability and its amplifiers. If you play football or another sport in which you know you'll get hit every week before getting into that collision, you'd better start thinking, how am I going to prepare my body before it gets hit? What you do on and off the field in terms of developing and maintaining your pliability is critical to helping prevent injury and lowering the chances of injury when you do get hit. Inflammation, a primer. In the sport I play, I know I'm going to get hit. There is going to be trauma, and my body will naturally create trauma responses to ease the pain and soreness after every game. Even if our thoughts and emotions play no part in generating inflammation, but in fact they do, if you play any kind of sport at any level, it's a given that you'll end up with some degree of inflammation. So let's take a closer look at what inflammation means. There are two kinds, acute inflammation and chronic inflammation. Acute inflammation, which lasts only a few days, is a natural response of our body's immune system. When we get injured, the body sends in small proteins, known as cytokines, that fence off the affected area and clean away the damaged cells while circulating oxygen, nutrients, and antibodies that help our bodies deal with infection and accelerate healing and recovery. Along with helping our blood clot, these natural proteins trigger the pain, swelling, and high temperatures that go along with recovery. Chronic inflammation, on the other hand, happens when the body is continually sending out the same white blood cells and cytokines in response to what it perceives as a threat. These white blood cells and cytokines have no idea they're targeting healthy muscles or their tissues. They're only doing what they're supposed to do. The thing is, our bodies aren't designed to deal with everyday inflammation responses, and over time, our white blood cells can begin degrading our organs and our bones. Low-level everyday inflammation is thought to play a part in some long-term diseases and conditions. There's also the inflammation that takes place in the gut that can interfere with how we absorb nutrients like calcium and vitamin D, which help keep our bones healthy. Inflammation is inevitable when you do what I do for